This is the Voice of America broadcasting from Washington. It is now 23 hours Greenwich Mean Time. Here is the news. The Apollo astronauts have landed on the moon following a precise and self-controlled landing procedure. Astronauts David Scott and James Irwin flew the moon landing craft down to a site in high rugged mountains, as planned, next to a gorge called Hadley Rill. Astronaut Alfred Worden continues to fly the Apollo command ship in orbit of the moon. On the way down, astronaut Scott commented, "I've got a good spot," referring to his landing target. All the way to the moment of landing, astronaut Scott gave a steady report to Earth on the progress of the descent. Radio communication was excellent. And when they landed, astronaut Scott reported, "Okay, Houston, the Falcon is on the plane at Hadley." Falcon is the code name for the lunar landing craft. The landing came right on schedule and precisely on target. In about a half hour, astronaut Scott is to open the top hatch of the landing craft and look around at the moonscape. He's to report on what he sees for about 30 minutes. And afterward, he and astronaut Irwin plan to eat supper, relax, and go to sleep. Saturday's schedule is strenuous for the two moon explorers, who plan a nearly 7-hour walk and work period on the lunar surface itself. Rescue workers are still searching for bodies in the northern part of the Japanese island of Honshu after the worst airline disaster in history. A Japanese Air Force jet collided with an All Nippon Airways Boeing 727, killing all 162 persons aboard. The fighter pilot, a student with only 21 hours flying experience, parachuted to safety. In another disaster, at the Po Air Force Base in the French Pyrenees, a Nord Atlas transport plane crash-landed, killing all 37 persons aboard, 3 crew members, 30 paratroopers, and 4 instructors. Sudanese military courts have sentenced 3 Sudanese army officers to prison terms ranging from 2 to 14 years for participation in last week's unsuccessful coup. Sudan's head of state, Jafar Numeri, commuted the death sentence of an army lieutenant to 20 years imprisonment. Reports from Khartoum say 400 suspects have been released from jail after questioning. 14 persons, including 3 communist leaders, have been executed since the coup failed. Cairo Radio says Egypt's President Anwar Sadat spoke on recent Mideast developments and the Arab-Israeli question during Friday's session of the Tripoli Conference. Attending the conference are the heads of state of Egypt, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and South Yemen. The Palestinian guerrillas are represented by the chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Yasser Arafat. Cairo Radio said Mr. Arafat and Libya's head of state, Muammar Gaddafi, spoke of the plight of the guerrillas in Jordan. Algeria has suspended relations with Jordan, while Syria and Iraq have closed their Jordanian frontiers. In Jerusalem, Assistant Secretary of State Joseph Sisko conferred for more than 3 hours with Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir. Israeli Foreign Minister Abba Iban also participated after meeting separately with Mr. Sisko. A brief communique said the talks covered a wide range of matters of mutual interest. Mr. Sisko is in Israel to continue American efforts to help achieve an interim agreement to reopen the Suez Canal. Mr. Iban said the talks will resume early next week. The United States has announced an additional gift of $1 million for the relief of people in East Pakistan. The money will support United Nations activities. The United States has already given more than $70 million in cash and goods to UN aid for East Pakistani refugees in India, and it has made grants of $2 million to finance chartering coastal vessels in East Pakistan to distribute relief supplies. North Vietnamese troops attacked a South Vietnamese ranger camp in the Central Highlands Friday, ending a relatively lull period in the Vietnam War. The attackers were repelled and at least 40 of them killed. Three of the defending South Vietnamese were killed. There were also shelling attacks on Allied bases in the northern part of South Vietnam. A White House spokesman says the new ambassador to the Paris peace talks will assume his duties as soon as possible, but he did not give an exact date. White House News Secretary Ronald Ziegler flatly denied a suggestion that Mr. Porter's arrival is being delayed to hold up negotiations until after the October 3rd elections in South Vietnam. Yugoslav President Tito says a proposed European security conference must be well prepared, and if there are prospects of failure, it should not be convened. The Yugoslav leader voiced the opinion in an exclusive interview granted to Italian writer Alberto Moravia and published Friday in the L'Espresso of Rome. In the wide-ranging interview, Marshal Tito said Yugoslavia does not recognize the Brezhnev doctrine of limited sovereignty. Under the doctrine, Moscow says it has the right to intervene in the internal affairs of another communist country if it feels that communism is threatened there. President Tito also talked of Yugoslavia's relations with Bulgaria, saying that the essence of the dispute there is Bulgaria's non-recognition of the Macedonian nation. He said Bulgaria's attitude on this causes indignation in Yugoslavia. The Soviet Communist Party newspaper Pravda has again called for a conference of all five nuclear countries: the United States, Soviet Union, France, Britain, and Communist China. The paper said such a conference would not affect the strategic arms limitation talks between the United States and the Soviet Union. Pravda said the purpose of those talks is to limit the strategic arms systems of the two powers only, while a five-power meeting would aim at limiting the entire arms race. House and Senate negotiators Friday agreed on a compromise bill to extend the nation's draft law for 2 years. The bill urges President Nixon to negotiate a date for total withdrawal of American forces from Indochina in return for the release of American prisoners. However, the new measure does not include the 9-month deadline provision, which had been the cause of the month-long stalemate. Senators favoring a withdrawal deadline had threatened prolonged debate to bury any compromise bill before Congress quits for its summer recess a week from now. President Nixon personally called on labor and management to halt the rail strike, which has now spread to 10 rail lines. But the president said he does not plan to directly intervene at this time in the strike. Meanwhile, major American steel companies are preparing to shut down. It appears the United Steelworkers will walk off the job Saturday at midnight. Groote Schuur Hospital in Cape Town, South Africa, reports the heart and lung transplant patient has been in excellent condition, except for one setback. 51-year-old Adrian Herbert had a minor setback Wednesday when he developed a cough and breathing trouble. A hospital spokesman says since then he has continued to improve. Here again are the major stories at this hour. America's lunar lander, the Falcon, touches down on the moon. Rescue workers search for dead in Japan after the worst airline disaster in history. And five Arab leaders meet with Palestine guerrilla chief. That's the news. This has been Jack Moyles reporting on the Voice of America Breakfast Show. Focus on the Apollo 15 moon landing and exploration. Early in the mission, launched last Monday, the three astronauts gained a reputation for being not too communicative. But, as National Broadcasting Company's Russ Ward reports, something happened when the great moon itself appeared.
For the first 3 days of Apollo 15's mission to the moon, it was all business. The radio transmissions from Scott, Irwin, and Worden were, for the most part, confined to technical data, readouts from their instrument panel, and updates of their flight plan. When asked for something a little more graphic, what does the moon look like, for example, the response would be a matter of fact, well, it's getting bigger. That was during the first 3 days. The transmissions from Apollo 15 have developed a change in language, a subtle indication that no matter how science-oriented a man may be, he can still be overwhelmed by sheer size. That, in fact, is the word Colonel David Scott used. When you get it all at once, he told Houston, it's just overwhelming. The command ship was just starting its 6-day circular path around the moon. In the next few days, said Scott, I hope we can sort of get our minds organized and be a little more precise in what we're saying. I tell you, he added, this is absolutely mind-boggling. The enthusiasm of Scott and Irwin and Worden is not surprising. The moon has impressed previous space travelers with comments ranging from stark, rugged, desolate, to it looks like plaster of Paris. Moonwalker Pete Conrad, the commander of Apollo 12, put it in easy-to-understand language when he said, it doesn't look like a very good place for a Navy man to pull liberty. Apollo 15 will be on the moon for about 67 hours, considerably longer than the three earlier landing missions. It is not known whether the stay will include such non-scientific activities as golfing. With three separate excursions across the moon's surface ahead of them, and a 20-mile drive in history's first moon buggy, Apollo 15 astronauts David Scott and James Irwin, with or without the golfing activities of Apollo 14, are assured a prominent place in the history of lunar exploration. This is Russ Ward, NBC News, New York.
The Apollo 15 mission is right on schedule. The lunar module is now settled on the lunar surface. And this seems to be a good time for a report from VOA science editor Joseph Lubin.
Exploration of the moon can teach us much about the history of Earth. Thanks to the rocks collected on the earlier Apollo flights, we know that the moon is as old as the Earth and was formed at the same time. But unlike Earth, it has not weathered over the years. It has not experienced the eroding effects of atmosphere and oceans. All the remnants of an evolutionary past remain largely intact. Exploring that past will be a prime mission for the Apollo 15 astronauts. David Scott and James Irwin will be able to stay twice as long on the moon's surface and explore 10 times the area available to earlier Apollo astronauts. They will be exploring what scientists regard as the most intriguing part of the moon. Critical to the fulfillment of this exploration is an electrically powered automobile called the Lunar Rover, specially designed for mobility on the moon's surface. By riding rather than walking, the astronauts will conserve strength, stretch their supplies of oxygen and water, and cover the 38-kilometer distance around the edges of the Apennines, rising 4,000 meters high, and the 365-meter-deep Hadley Rill Gorge. Astronauts Scott and Irwin will set out and activate lunar surface experiments, including an instrument designed to measure the moon's internal heat after their departure. Overhead, a third member of the expedition, astronaut Alfred Worden, will be conducting photographic and other experiments and making preparations for the launching of a small satellite. This satellite will orbit the moon for a year to study events affecting both moon and Earth.
That Apollo 15 report from VOA science editor Joseph Lubin. The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the mission of Apollo 15, scheduled at this hour, has been delayed 25 minutes. We will resume at 23 hours 40 GMT with Commander David Scott's description of the lunar landing area. We ask all VOA facilities to remain on the air until 0 hour 30 GMT for our special programming. Now, on our worldwide network, we invite you to stay tuned for The Breakfast Show. Here is a news summary from the Voice of America. America's Apollo 15 astronauts are now on the moon. They landed on time and on target. And here's how astronaut Scott reported the landing to Mission Control.
25, 2, 7% fuel, 20 at 1, 15 at 1, minus 1, minus 1, 6% fuel, 10 feet minus 1, 8 feet minus 1, contact. Man. Okay, your student of Falcon is on the plane at Hadley.
Roger, roger, Falcon.
Astronaut David Scott making the Apollo landing on the moon. Rescue workers continue the search for bodies on the Japanese island of Honshu after the worst airline disaster in history. 162 people were killed when a Japanese Air Force jet collided with an all-Nippon Airways plane. In another disaster, a Nord Atlas transport plane crash-landed at the Po Air Force Base in the French Pyrenees, killing all 37 people aboard. The U.S. has announced an additional gift of $1 million for the relief of East Pakistani refugees in India. The heads of five Arab countries met with Palestinian guerrilla leader Arafat Friday at an emergency Tripoli session on the guerrilla leader Arafat Friday at the emergency Tripoli session on the guerrilla situation in Jordan. Algeria has suspended relations with Jordan while Syria and Iraq have closed their Jordanian frontiers. That's the news, Jack Moyles reporting on the Voice of America at 23 hours 30, Greenwich Mean Time.
Good morning. I'm Betty Houston, and I'm welcoming you to more music and features. In a few minutes, we'll hear the views and opinions from the president of the University of Wisconsin. But right now, the music of Bloomfield and Cooper.
We interrupt this program to continue our special coverage of the mission of Apollo 15. From the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, here is Norman Guerin.
The Lunar Module Falcon, with its two astronauts, touched down in the Hadley Rill section of the moon 1 hour 25 minutes ago at 22 hours 16 minutes GMT. Commander Scott is preparing for a verbal description of the landing site, which he will conduct while standing from the docking hatch. For a running account of this event, we take you to the Manned Spacecraft Center and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Well, we just heard from Dave Scott a minute ago saying he was ready. He started to give us some descriptions of some things he could see out the windows of the Lunar Module Falcon. And to use a good old United States expression, he's really turned on. He's quite excited about this landing site, the place they've touched down. And with me is Lunar Module pilot Fred Hayes of Apollo 13, who has done much of this same sort of training for the landing site from Mars. Unfortunately, that one didn't make it. And Fred, welcome to our Voice of America program again. And I would like to thank you on behalf of all of us here for being with us to help us describe these EVAs. We hope you'll be with us throughout the several lunar excursions. Don't you think this is going to be an exciting one?
Well, I think certainly from a landing spot that you could pick on the moon and the variety of features and exciting things to see, Hadley certainly offers a good deal more than any place we've targeted to before. There's a great relief in terms of the mountains, and certainly the real right ahead of them there where they landed is going to be an exciting thing to look down in and be able to see.
Is this this is considerably more rugged than the Fraubaro site for which you trained for Apollo 13, isn't it?
The specific landing spot is not. The surrounding terrain is. The relief in the certainly in the Apennines mountains is an order of magnitude greater than the same relative hills we had in the Fraubaro region.
Mm-hmm.
But like most places we intend to touch down, we're very careful to pick a spot with a little bit of margin and level ground to get the limb down. Of course, you have to make the landing to be able to do the rest of the job.
Well, a few minutes ago, when Dave was talking to capsule communicator Joe Allen, who's now in Mission Control, that's the voice you'll hear from here on Earth when they begin this stand-up EVA, or SIVA as it's called, Dave called in and started describing some of the things he can see from the point at which they touched down. He can see part of what is called St. George's Crater. This must be a crater rim, which is part of the Apennine front, actually down to the south, and he could see a mountain across the rill to the west called Bennett Hill, named for Floyd Bennett, one of the designers of the mission here at the Manned Spacecraft Center. These are informal names, incidentally, not to be confused with official names through the geophysical organizations of the world. We're going to hear some real wild ones on this mission, too, aren't we, Fred?
Yes, they have a greater number and variety of names, just due to the fact that the rover allows you to cover so much greater territory that you end up having to name a lot more things than we had to on previous missions.
Now you've touched on it, the rover, the thing which means that this mission should be able to bring back the greatest amount of scientific reward of all of the Apollo flights, the small automobile, the carts, or as we'll call it from now on, just the rover. They're going to be able to go about 7.5 kilometers away from the landing site on the second excursion, day after tomorrow.
This is Apollo Control at 106 hours, 10 minutes. We do not at this time have an update on the scheduled start time of the stand-up EVA. It obviously will not be at the scheduled flight plan time, which is at this minute. The crew, once they get the cabin squared away, we'll have very little remaining before they can depressurize and open the hatch, allowing Dave Scott to stand up through the overhead hatch and take a look around. Capcom Gordon Fullerton is at the moment conversing with Al Warden aboard the Command Module Endeavor, which has its scientific instruments in operation in the sim bay at this time. Both cameras, as well as the gamma ray, alpha ray, and laser altimeter. Transcripts on these conversations will be made available in the news center. They're being recorded and will be put out on the tables in transcript form.
Go ahead.
Back to communication with Falcon. Joe Allen just...
Say, I think we need a couple words on the flits stowed on the cabin floor. We've got the two pins out on the side and can't seem to get it up.
This is Dave Scott. Dave Scott asking for some information on the portable life support system and the way it's stowed on the floor. Well, Fred, how is that tied down? Are you familiar with this particular situation?
Yes, the plis that's on the floor at one end, has an indenture in the plis that mates with a male type connector in the floor of the limb, and at the forward end there are two what we call pip pins. They're really just quick release pull type of pins that hold the front end down, and normally you can pull the front two pins, and then by sliding the plis slightly forward you can then tip it up and it's free of the floor.
Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't have to mount, put on the plis in order for this stand-up EVA.
No, the reason they're fiddling with the plis right now is simply to get it out of their way. So it's occupying a good part of the center of the limb floor and the working area for Jim Irwin, while Dave is climbing up to get out of the hatch.
He's just going to stand on the engine cover, isn't he?
That's right.
On the cover for the descent engine sticks up into the floor, up almost a half meter or so.
Falcon, this is Houston.
Yep.
And so Dave can stand on it when he opens the hatch on top of the limb.
Roger, Dave, we suggest you try first holding the bracket at the front in place while you push the plis aft and jiggle it.
Okay.
Hold it in and jiggle it aft, huh? This is the Portable Life Support System, PLSS. The PLIS. This is the backpack which will be used during the extravehicular activity. Now, as Fred has explained, they've got to take that, get it out of the way. Okay, now, Fred, what's the latest you have on where they actually landed? Have you gotten some new information there? Well, what I hear is there are several guesses right now as to where they actually sit down. Of course, you get a number out of the computer as to where it thinks it ended up. Then based on, the redesignations that they saw Dave Scott make relative to the supposed targeted spot, they could extrapolate from that and figure out a point. And, of course, the one that would really be nice to have and the one that counts most is if Dave himself or Jim can look out the window of the limb or when he's out working out the upper hatch, actually physically pinpoint some nearby craters that, of course, would tie very exactly where they are. Right now, we don't have that information, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the best guess is they're a little bit long and to the south or to the left of their intended spot, something in the order of 2,000 feet.
In other words, in taking the target reference point on the map and going from what we have heard so far from Dave Scott and Jim Irwin, they were a little long, which means just a little bit to the west of the landing spot, and then a bit to the south, about 2,000 feet, let's see,
right.
That's about 500 or so meters. And that is about what we estimated from his earlier descriptions, that he thought he could see the Salyut crater, which is a very old and easily almost covered over indention in the surface, named for the Russian space station. He may be looking... Well, he couldn't look out the back and see that.
No.
If he actually sees Salyut.
No.
He may see something else. He may not be
yep.
sure of that. So this is something else that we can learn from this stand-up EVA when he's up in the hatch. Presumably, Dave's going to be able to look around and see some clear features and pinpoint the exact touchdown spot. Is that a fair guess?
Yes, that's... of course, is the most exact position you could get is one with a visual reference outside.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're running just a little late. The astronauts and the spacecraft are running just a bit late in getting ready to open the top hatch. As you heard just a moment ago, the reason for this is because Scott and Irwin are having just a little trouble in getting the portable life support system out of the way on
Falcon,
the floorboard
Houston,
there.
Any luck with it, please?
Here's Joe Allen asking if there's any luck with that. Let's see what the answer is.
Oh, Rog. Sorry, yes, we got it up. That worked fine.
So while we're waiting for him to get up to the hatch, I'd like to bring you this recorded conversation we had with Dave before he left Houston here about the extravehicular excursions here on the moon. This was recorded before liftoff here in Houston. Dave, from our conversations earlier and from listening to you discuss these lunar traverses, the lunar exploration for Apollo 15, you've really been turned on and excited about it. I think you're going to be on the threshold of some of the greatest scientific discoveries in the history of mankind, and I get the sense that you feel that way, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's talk about them just a bit. During the first traverse, what are you going to do, and what do you think is going to be the important thing to find?
Well, I'll briefly summarize, because I could spend a great deal of time on this
subject. We talk the rest of the day while you're doing it.
But primarily, we expect to look at the material from the Apennine Front on the first traverse. And hopefully this will give us an answer as to whether there was an original crustal material on the moon before the many impacts which created its face, or the surface is basically layer upon layer upon layer of debris from impacts as far back as the creation of the moon.
Now, the Apennine Front, this is where the mountains fall off and some debris has fallen down into this mare site where you're landing. You can't drive your rover all the way up the side of it, but supposedly you can get to this debris area and get a very good sampling of it.
Yes,
right?
The crater called St. George, we feel, has excavated deep enough to bring up this original crystalline material, which if the crustal material existed, it's crystalline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we expect to find on the that's similar to an orthosite. And
an orthosite. You're a geologist.
Well, yes, I hope we're geologists. And if we find a crystalline material there, it answers one question. If we find nothing but the breccias, which are the layering of many, many events, we have another answer to the question.
Mm-hmm. And then you do plan to take a look at the rill on that first traverse as you
yes,
go out
right.
down south in the rover.
Yes, we have a place on the, we call it the elbow, at which we can see the bottom of the rill in two directions, which precludes the necessity of going over the edge of the rill.
Mm-hmm.
We can see it from the corner there, from the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect
we'll be hearing you talk about elbow. We're at elbow. Right. We're at the front. Give me some of the names we'll be hearing you call out during that first traverse.
We'll see Elbow Crater, and we'll see St. George Crater, and there are three smaller ones there in the area between Station 2 and 3.
We'll hear you talking about stations, sites you're supposed to
go to. Not so much stations this time, Rhett, as areas.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the resolution of the photography and the lack of knowledge of what's really there, why our stations are within an area there that we almost sometimes call a boutonnage, which is a geological term for a long, thin formation in a rock. But we go to an area, and someplace in the area we hope to find a significant crater to help us understand what's there. And somewhere between 2 and 3 we'll run across, we hope, flow. And we've named these craters based on what they associate geologically. We have a crater called Flow, one called Slide, and one called Fan.
Mm-hmm.
And we should go by all of those.
All right, we'll be listening to you and Jim Irwin describe them and talk about them when you get there. Now, on the second traverse, and again, the most important part of this whole mission is lunar exploration, even more so than the experiments package, right?
Right.
All right, the second traverse, you're going to go as far as 7.5 kilometers away.
Right.
That in itself could be sort of dangerous, but you have redundant systems to help you get back safely, don't you? The rover, your backpacks, the buddy system, and so forth.
Yes, we always have the capability to walk back. We have enough time and enough consumables with us in our backpacks to walk back from any point at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a constraint on distance.
How far away will you be able to see the limb as you depart? Just a couple of kilometers?
Yes. On the lunar surface, if it were a smooth billiard ball type surface, a man 6 feet tall can see 2.5 kilometers mm-hmm. to the horizon.
In this case, it isn't smooth. You have all sorts of rises and falls, so you may not average that.
That's right.
Okay. The same thing goes for the second traverse, examining the front, the Apennine front, right?
Yes. The Apennine front is a series of different formations. The base of the front there is comprised of first the crater St. George, and then what we expect is a landslide down the side. And then as we go along, we find other material which has not been slumped from the upslopes. There's probably less mass wasting. And we find at the end of the area there on Station 2, or on EVA 2, a crater called Front Crater, which has apparently excavated a contact between the front and the Maury surface, because there's an inflection point or a change in slope right in the middle of the crater.
We're going to have some geologists talking at length about that here with us. So
good.
But that is a prime objective to get to, if you can possibly...
Yes, that's correct.
If everything goes well off that 7.5 kilometers away.
Depending on how the traffic ability is in that area.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, can we drive the rover through the debris if there is debris there?
Mm-hmm. Then on the third EVA, you go up to the side of the rill, and then you go to some interesting secondary craters up to the north.
Well, yes. The north complex there on the third EVA, I think, is one of the most exciting areas at Hadley. We think it's a volcanic constructional complex, we being the crew, I guess, and some people don't share our thoughts on it, and there's a little controversy as to how that was...
We interrupt this program briefly to correct some technical difficulties. You're listening to the Voice of America's continuous coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. The astronauts are now preparing to conduct what is called a hatch EVA. That will be when Commander Scott reaches the top door to describe what he sees surrounding the lunar lander Falcon, now near Hadley Rill on the lunar surface. Now, late news from the VOA newsroom.
Rescue workers continue the search for bodies on the Japanese island of Honshu after the worst airline disaster in history. 162 persons were killed when a Japanese Air Force jet collided with an All Nippon Airways plane. In another disaster, a Nord Atlas transport plane crash-landed at the Pau Air Force Base in the French Pyrenees, killing all 37 persons aboard. The United States has announced an additional gift of $1 million for the relief of East Pakistani refugees in India. The U.S. already has given more than $70 million to UN aid for the refugees. The heads of the five Arab countries met with Palestinian guerrilla leader Arafat Friday at an emergency Tripoli session on the guerrilla situation in Jordan. Algeria has suspended relations with Jordan, while Syria and Iraq have closed their Jordanian frontiers. American Assistant Secretary of State Joseph Sisko conferred with Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir and Foreign Minister Abba Eban. The talks included discussion of a possible interim agreement to reopen the Suez Canal. TASS News Agency says Soviet leaders are taking all possible steps in an effort to halt what it called a mass reign of terror in Sudan, directed particularly at communists. Sudan protested to the Soviet ambassador in Khartoum against what it described as a biased and unfair Soviet campaign against Sudan in the wake of last week's short-lived coup. The Soviet Communist Party newspaper Pravda again called for a conference of all five nuclear countries, Britain, France, the Soviet Union, Communist China, and the United States. It said such a meeting should attempt to limit the entire arms race. Now from the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, here again is Norman Guerin.
We take you now to the Manned Spacecraft Center and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner for our continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 15.